Call to the Transportation Committee and ask us to please come to order. Marilyn, would you please call the roll?
Chair Harrell.
Here.
Vice Chair Perry. Senator Berman.
Here.
Senator Bracy. Senator Gaynor.
Here.
Senator Jones. Senator Rodriguez. Senator Wright.
Here.
Quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And please note that Senator Bracy and Senator Jones are excused. And I'd like to remind anybody who has something like this, beeps, buzzes, or makes noise, please put it on silent for us. And also like to remind anybody speaking before the committee to please fill out an appearance card so that we may have you for the record. And today is going to be most likely a fairly brief meeting, depends on how long-winded highway safety is today. But we really are starting to look at legislation and what the priorities of the departments are, and they will be coming forth with a bill. So we wanted to get a preview of that and really really start to have the conversation about what we want to put in our DHSMV legislation. So with that, I'd like to recognize Kevin Jacobs, who's Legislative Affairs Director for Highway Safety. And you are
better? Okay. All right. So we have a smaller package this year, thanks to Chair Harrell successfully championing our legislation last session. So we have about 10 issues that span across our Division of Motorist Services, our Florida Highway Patrol, as well as our Bureau of Administrative Review that's housed within our Office of General Counsel. All right, so the first issue, surviving spouses and title transfers. In 2017, there was some legislation passed that dealt with a very specific situation in which multiple or both spouses were named on the title, and it allowed for a no-fee transaction for when the deceased spouse was removed into just the surviving spouse's name. And what we're asking for is to include a situation in which the title is just in one of the individual's names and it needs to be transferred over to the surviving spouse's title. We would like that to be with a no-fee transaction as well. The second one, registration stops. This was brought to us by the Department of Transportation, and I'll give myself an example. If I'm driving down the highway and I go through a bunch of tolls and I don't pay those tolls, right now the tolling entities have the authorization to put my plate on a list, send that list over to the Department of Highway Safety. Highway Safety actually takes that list and all the different plates on it, flags it with what we call a registration stop, so that when I go in to register and renew my vehicle registration that year, I'm not able to do so until I satisfy those tolls. So what we found happens is instead of going in to renew that, knowing that I can't do so, I can go in and say, hey, I lost my plate. My plate was stolen. And then they process a replacement, and I get a new configuration with a new plate. I take that, and I don't have to pay any of those outstanding tolls. And so they're circumventing the process, and we are trying to come forward and change the legislation so that they don't close that loophole and are not able to do that. The third one, garage liability insurance. This one deals with all the different dealers that we have oversight over. That includes motor vehicle dealers. This includes the mobile home dealers, the manufactured home dealers. And last year, we were able to pass this legislation for the car dealers. However, we weren't able to pass it for the other entities. And so what happens is these different dealerships, they register with the department every year or every 2 years, depending on the period of their registration. And when they come do that registration with us, they're required to provide us proof of a surety bond or garage liability insurance. And that is the only time that they have to prove that to us. And so the in-between periods, depending on the period of their registration, requires a lot of administrative work on us. And so what we do is every month we run a query on all the dealers that have a soon-to-expire insurance policy or surety bonds soon-to-expire. And we send up to 3 emails, a courtesy email saying, hey, provide us an update about where you are with your policy, make sure you're compliant still. And then if they don't respond to those, we send a final letter out to them. If they don't respond to that letter, we take those dealers, we send it over to our legal office, who drafts an administrative complaint for each of the dealers on the list, and they send certified mail to all of the addresses that we have for that dealership, as well as the address on the SunBiz website that's hosted by the Department of State. So we're sending up to probably on average 3 different certified letters to each of these dealers at that point with the complaint. And then just to find out that most of the time they've renewed their policy, they've changed their provider, they've updated it, they're actually compliant with law. And so what we're asking for is for them to, anytime they update their policy, change their policy, cancel their policy, provide that information in the department within 10 days to alleviate that administrative burden and stop us from having to send so many letters out, save some money there. And so again, we passed this for the motor vehicle dealers, and so we're trying to take that legislation and make sure everybody's on an even playing ground with the other dealerships that we oversee. The next one, privatized rebuild inspection. Again, I'll use myself as an example. If I crash my car, I crash it pretty badly, and it's not to the point where it has to be crushed and sold for parts, but it's passed within that threshold where we deem it's rebuildable. We actually brand the title to say it is deemed rebuildable, and that means that you can't re-register or get that car back on the road until you have a rebuilt inspection. That rebuilt inspection is one that doesn't deal with the safety of the vehicle, but deals with making sure that the parts that are used to rebuild that car are not stolen. That was historically done by the department until 2013. In 2013, the legislature passed a pilot to say, hey, the department needs to go out and see if any private entities want to take over this process. We did that pilot in Miami-Dade. Miami-Dade took it over. We oversaw a bunch of the entities there. They renewed it. They kept trying to sunset. They renewed and renewed and renewed until 2018, where the sunset actually took place. The legislation for the pilot went away. The department absorbed the inspections again in the Miami-Dade region. And then until 2019 session came about, and they revamped the privatization in Miami-Dade County only and said, hey, department, oversee it again. And also during that process, they said, hey, do a report to say, hey, is this effective? And as well as, should you expand this to other parts of the state? So we just finished that report in July of this year, and we found it to be very effective. And we also recommended that we could expand this to 11 different counties in the state. We chose those counties based on where we have regional offices that can oversee the process with our current personnel. All right, next one is dealer licensing. Dealer licensing is, again, we oversee the motor vehicle dealers here in Florida. And as part of that process, they have to get a license with us. And we have the ability to revoke or deny a license if for different reasons. But what we find is there are some bad actors out there. And if we revoke them, they tend to pop up in a new dealership under the guise of somebody else's name, whether that be a spouse, whether that be a family member. And we find that they are actually serving in the capacity that drives business decisions of the dealership, what we call a control person. And so we lack the authority now, and we're asking for the authority to ensure that those individuals who have had their license denied or revoked are not able to act as a control person in any other dealership that we oversee. This is similar to administrative processes that are found in other state agencies such as agriculture or financial regulation. The last one for our motor services dealer, motor services division is charter buses. Charter buses, this deals with charter buses and the definition of an apportionable vehicle. Apportionable vehicles are the big trucks that out there that operate in multiple states. So if I have a trucking industry here and I'm operate out of Florida, I register in Florida under the international registration plan. I get those apportionable tags or the colored ones that you see on the front and the back of the vehicle. And so when they operate here and say I go into Georgia, I pay my registration fees in Florida. And due to the plan, they say, hey, where are you operating? And then Florida provides some of that registration fee to Georgia based on where I'm operating. Historically, charter buses have been exempt from the definition of apportionable vehicles, so they have not operated under the International Registration Plan. However, in 2016, the federal definition was amended. They are no longer exempt, and they have been running under this, and they have been operating as apportionable vehicles and doing the right thing and registering correctly. This is just us codifying current practice and aligning with federal law.
Before we go into Florida to FHP, I'd like to ask for questions. Let's do each segment as standalone and then ask for questions. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask you about, go back to privatized rebuild inspection. I think you mentioned that you have 11 offices that will be overseeing that. Will they be overseeing all 67 counties?
You're recognized.
We're doing right now. We are. We've kind of looked and see where people have asked. We've heard from, I think, Hillsborough and as well as Duval. And so the 11 counties are the ones that we feel like we can take on right now. I think if other people say they want to expand, we're open to that opportunity.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I hear you.
Senator Perry, you're recognized in questions.
On those inspections, do you subcontract those out or do you self-perform all of those inspections?
You're recognized.
For the private rebuild inspections. So the way it works, if it's in Miami-Dade now, the private entity does the full inspection. We have created a like a portal for them to provide all the information of the inspection that we would do. They use our forms and our policies, and then we go in and we periodically go in to check the paperwork, and we go in and inspect the actual entity and the physical location to make sure that they're doing it to what we say is code.
Follow up.
And do you work with law enforcement then? You're talking about parts that were for off a stolen vehicle. Is that easy to determine, hard to determine? I guess some parts would be more than others, but do you work with law enforcement then to try to, I know we have these chop shops that are stealing cars all the time and doing this, so do y'all work in conjunction with them to try to find the source of these?
You're recognized.
So what they do is they check the VIN on the parts, and they run the VIN to make sure that the part is not flagged as stolen and that it's like a manufacturer part. And so we have not found there to be many cases in which they are part of a stolen. I think that if they did, they would send that investigation part of a law enforcement. It would move over. It wouldn't be a part of the private entity doing any of those investigations. But we found it to be very successful in that it's not using stolen parts so far in the privatized world.
Further questions on any aspect of this section dealing with motorist services? Seeing no further questions, let's move on to Florida Highway Patrol.
Okay. So the first one is about providing proof of insurance to law enforcement. This is one that I certainly and assume everybody probably thought was current law. And so Florida law states now that law enforcement officers may ask for proof of insurance only if the operator of the vehicle is also the registered owner of the vehicle. And so what we are trying to do is amend the law to clarify that it requires any operator of a vehicle must provide proof of insurance at the time that the law enforcement asks them to. The second one is a texting and driving report. So every year, the Department of Highway Safety collects and aggregates data from the 400-plus different law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Florida. We collect that information every year, and we have to report on it by February 1 of each year. And so since it's an annual report and we're doing a year amount of data, that only allows us 1 month to collect all that information and to aggregate it and report it to you all. And so what we're asking for is a little bit more time to do that, knowing historically we've had some gaps in people being late on reporting, and so the report could be more robust, we feel, if we have a little bit more time to follow up with those agencies that take a little bit longer. Some of them are still on paper reporting, and it really just would help align us with other reporting that we do for, like, red light camera reports and other ones that we present to the legislature to allow us a little bit more time to get exactly what you guys requested.
Any questions on Florida Highway Patrol section? Senator Berman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you clarify how much is a little bit more time?
You're recognized.
So we've discussed this, and we've modeled it. We've tried to model it after the red light camera report because that's one that I dealt with a lot. And so what we're hoping to do is to allow for the end of the first quarter, so around April is when they need to start. They need to report that information to us. So they'll have from January to April to report that information to us, and then we would like from around April to July to actually follow up with them and aggregate that information to submit the report. So July would be the day that we're initially going for, but we're open to suggestions.
Follow up.
So you're requesting to go to from 1 month to 3 months? Is that because you said you normally have 1 month to report it? Now you're going to go from April to July. So you're requesting for, instead of 1 month, 3 months? Is that what I'm understanding?
You recognized.
It's a little bit more than that. Right now we have January to January data is when they're giving us, and they have from January to February, so they have 1 month right now for them to submit and for us to aggregate the information and follow up with them. Oh. We're asking for them to submit by April, and we will actually submit the report by July, so it would be downtown by July, but we would have a couple more months in the meantime to follow up with them of the people that are slow to report.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I think that that's a pretty big extension from February to July, and when you do the bill, I think I'd like you to reconsider and maybe make it a little tighter. Thank you.
Any further questions on Florida Highway Patrol?
Yes.
Senator Perry.
So you've mentioned some of these entities are doing paper tabulations or whatever. Do you upload the information into a portal that you have, or how's the information received to you? How do you get that?
You're recognized.
So we have set up a ability to do it through our DAVID system, which is a law enforcement database that all the law enforcement have access to. Some of the smaller counties and smaller police departments still use paper forms when it comes to uniform traffic citations, so they have to take that information, put it into their databases, and submit it to us. And so we get it electronic. It's not hard for us to aggregate the data because it is electronically submitted. It's just more time for us to say, hey, whatever county hasn't submitted, what's going on? Why haven't you guys gotten our information yet? Because we don't want to have gaps in the report.
Follow up.
These reports, I haven't seen them. Do you deliver those to this committee or other committees?
Recognized.
I believe it goes to the governor's office, the speaker, and the president's office, but we'd be happy to get you a copy of them if you'd like to see them.
Yes.
Yes. Would you please do so? We'll make sure the whole committee gets them.
Absolutely.
Further questions? Seeing no further questions on Florida Highway Patrol, let's move on to the last section of Other.
Other. So the public records for personal identifying information, this deals with a couple different things. It deals with, again, the uniform traffic citations as well as the crash reports. Those reports have a lot of personal identifying information on them. They have things like your name, your date of birth, your home address. They have your phone number. They have your driver's license number on them. A lot of information that you probably wouldn't like to get out there to the public. And so crash reports currently are exempt from the public records laws for the first 60 days. Certain entities are able to access them within that window. If you're involved in the crash, if you're the lawyers for the entities that are involved in the crash, or if you are like the insurance companies, you can access them. But after that, anyone can gain access to the information as well as all your public information. And so what we're asking for is to remove the 60-day provision so that the personal identifying information on those records is exempt from public record unless the party requesting it meets one of the federal driver Privacy Protection Act exemptions. That is what we call DIPA. It is like our version of HIPAA from the medical field, but it deals with your driver license information. That's a federal act. And so if you meet one of those exemptions, you'll be able to get it. Or if you are one of the currently exempt parties as currently outlined in statute, you would still be able to get the private information. But other than that, the people that are using it for doing research, like the Department of Transportation and other big research entities like to aggregate it and make sure that they know where crashes are happening, they can still get that information, but it just wouldn't include your date of birth and things that are private to you. And this is important to us because not only is the information very close to the person, but it's not just the drivers that are on the crash report. It's the passengers. It's also people that just witnessed a crash. And so we want to lock that information down and make sure that people aren't getting it unless they need it.
Questions on that? And that has to be a standalone bill, because it is a public records exemption bill. So it would be a standalone bill. Any further questions on that? Okay, we have one more item.
Yes, so the last one deals with our Bureau of Administrative Review. Again, that is a bureau that is housed within our Office of General Counsel, and they consist of about 60 individuals that are housed in 8 different offices throughout the state of Florida. And they are tasked with providing services to drivers that have had their license suspended, and they do the administrative hearings for them. And what we are proposing is to clarify and revise the laws for the review hearings on the various types of suspensions, disqualifications, or revocations so that hearing officers follow the same procedures for any type of case that they hear. And the proposed legislation would also address a couple of the issues that these hearing officers are experiencing out in the field. One of which is we would like to revise the requirement that a physical driver's license is submitted as part of the arrest packet. As to, technology advances and people are scanning information in and emailing that to us, the arrest packet doesn't always include the physical license, and we've had people argue that since the physical license isn't part of it, it's incomplete. And this is especially important to us as we try to develop things like a mobile driver's license, where a physical credential isn't always going to be the way of the world. Also, we would like to ensure that we can conduct hearings through communication technology anywhere in the state. As I said, we have 8 different offices throughout the state and about 60 of these hearing officers, and we want to be able to make sure that we can divvy up the cases evenly across those if we're able to with the communication devices that are now permissible through state law. And the last one that I would like to mention is we would like to treat arresting officers and breath technicians as we do other witnesses for procedural purposes. And the example I would give for this is that when the Surfside incident happened, a lot of the officers in that region were all taken away from their posts, and they were sent over to Surfside to help that mission, and they had been subpoenaed for these types of cases. And for these types of witnesses only, if they do not show up when they've been subpoenaed to the hearing, the individual that has had their license suspended, that the case that they're supposed to show up for, automatically gets disqualified, and they get to go back on the road. So we would like to treat them like we do the other witnesses, where we have a procedure in place through administrative rule where there can be second options for a hearing under circumstances like this.
Any further questions on this section or any of the other sections? No? Okay. Well, thank you very much. And any further comment that you'd like to make concerning any part of it?
No, ma'am. I appreciate the opportunity to come present.
Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment? No. We have no public comment? Well, a quick meeting this morning, and I know Senator Berman's on her way to go do a bill, so you'll have plenty of time. And with that, Senator Wright moves, we are adjourned. We are adjourned.